2 years ago today, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 disappeared while flying from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. 239 people were on board. Since then, one confirmed piece of debris has been found, a section of the plane's wing on an island in the Indian Ocean. Just last week, a fragment that could be from a Boeing 777 was found on the Mozambique coastline. But in the months following the disappearance, the story dominated the news.
What in the hell happened to Malaysia Air Flight 370?
I'm absolutely certain that the southern corridor was the right corridor.
You know, a small black hole would suck in our entire universe, so we know it's not that. Bermuda Triangle is often weather.
The Malaysians this morning did say they are still extending the search into the South China Sea.
Could Malaysia Flight 370 have also turned into a so-called zombie plane?
So theories abound, but one of the voices you just heard there was CNN aviation reporter Richard Quest, who's just written a book called The Vanishing of Flight MH370, The True Story of the Hunt for the Missing Malaysian Plane. It's out today. He's with us. Richard Quest, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I have to say, by the way, I read this book while on a plane, and I had to keep turning over the cover because I didn't want people to see. I thought maybe it would be a bit morbid to be doing that. But
you try writing a book about a plane incident. A lot of this book was written on planes as I was traveling the world, and then I'd have the proofs and the notes, and there was always somebody looking and then realizing what I was writing, and then this horror. You know, who were they sitting next to?
And what do you think about the fact that here we are 2 years later, and we still don't know what happened to this plane?
It is a most extraordinary development. I think any one of us who's looked at this would have never said it was possible. But remember, there was Air France 447 a few years ago. That plane went down in the South Atlantic. And even though they found the debris of that plane, it still took 2 years before they were able to locate the body of the wreckage and retrieve the black boxes. So we've always known, Jeremy, that when planes cross oceans, they are not tracked in real time like most people believe they are. We know roughly where they are. The plane tells you where it is. But there's no radar over the Atlantic or the Pacific or the Southern Indian Ocean. And so the best you do is the plane has to say, I'm here. And if something happens, you go to the last best place to find it.
Well, in the case of MH370, one of the things that I still don't understand, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not at this point, but why were the communications with the ground turned off shortly into the flight? This is one of the things that's made it so difficult to figure out what happened to it. But what could have possibly been the reason for that?
We don't know. And that's the mystery. Now, this plane...
Is that something that somebody has to do, though? Well, or is that something that can happen automatically?
Well, there are six or seven independent communication devices on this aircraft. You've got the radios, high frequency and normal. You've got the satellite communications. You've got the transponders. Any one of which is somehow either sending via radio or satellite a signal. I think what we suffer from here is some very woolly, loose terminology was used by people like the Malaysian Prime Minister right at the beginning. He said the transponder was switched off. We don't know that's what happened. It could have been that the entire systems failed, because some like myself do believe that there's still a really strong chance it was a mechanical, not a pilot or nefarious action, because all those communications tools are based in the same place in the aircraft, in an underground, under the cockpit cubbyhole known as the E&E bay. And, you know, there are those of us who are still saying, do not blame the pilots yet. It could well have been mechanical.
Well, and a lot of people did blame the pilots.
They still
and
are.
They still are. But you actually became part of the story, and people may remember this, because just weeks before this incident, you had done a story about Malaysia Airlines, and you had been on a plane with one of the pilots of the plane that disappeared.
And the conspiracy theorists have had a field day with that, Jeremy. I had tweets and emails suggesting that somehow we were involved, CNN knew, I was aware, we were covering up, none of which, of course, is true. The fact is, on a prearranged filming shoot for Business Traveller, I was in Malaysia. We were going from Hong Kong to KL. We were on a 777. They were letting us film, and the co-pilot was a brand new minted co-pilot, and his name was Farik Hamid. 2.5, 3 weeks later, he was the co-pilot, the flying pilot, on MH370. I still have the video in my phone of him landing that plane we were on. I've looked at it again and again. You know, did I see something? I've watched the interview with him. Did he say something? Was there any hint of... Of course, there isn't anything at all. What he told us is he was a young guy engaged to be married who just wanted to fly the bigger planes because they went to more exciting places like London, Rome, Sydney.
And you believe him?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, if there was a pilot involvement... And I don't think there was. It is much more likely it would have been the captain, Captain Ahmed Zahari. But again, I don't think it was. I don't think... people have said Zahari was... His marriage was breaking down and he was bereft. They've said he was angry because he was a distant relative of Anwar Ibrahim, the opposition leader in Malaysia who'd just been arrested and convicted for sexual offences. You know, these are all rumours. There's no evidence that any of these events are either true in terms of leaving his wife or him being irrationally upset. And, you know, one pilot, a Malaysian Airlines captain, said to me, Richard, if your wife leaves you, you don't go and murder 238 other people. This guy had been a captain on the 777 fleet for 15-odd years. He was an eccentric. He made videos about and posted them on YouTube about how to fix your air conditioner. But everybody I've spoken to, not one person has said that he was or ever evidenced any form of derangement. And in fact, Jeremy, the only report we've had so far says there's no evidence of any change in his personal circumstances. The critics would say that report's a load of old rubbish, but it's the only report we've got.
What have you learned in writing this book that you didn't know in all those hours and days and months of coverage on the air?
That's a very good question. I think what I have learned is that dealing with this particular case was the most challenging for everyone involved because no fact was as it seemed. I'll give you an example. They go underwater to try and find to hear the pings from the ping locator. And they suddenly hear pings. And everybody thinks, this must be it. We've heard the pings. Now we've just got to fly in the black blocks. Not a bit of it. Who knows what those pings were they heard? At every twist and every turn, when the obvious seemed like it was about to happen, something completely out of this world took us in the opposite direction. When you're looking in one place, suddenly you're looking somewhere else and the plane has flown for 7 more hours. And even now, Jeremy, the debris that is coming up, it's being found. It's not being found nearby where they're searching
right
off the western coast of Australia. It's being found thousands of miles away on the other side of oceans. And that debris is not giving up secrets, I promise you that. Oh, it'll tell you it came from the plane and it'll tell you it came from the ocean. But it won't tell you where in the ocean and it won't tell you what happened at 1:19 on March the 8th, 2014, because that's the moment when everything happened. That's when Zahari said, good night, Malaysia 370. That's when the transponder was switched off. 2 minutes later was when the plane turned round, flew back across Malaysia, and we've never heard a word since.
Richard Quest, your network, CNN, came under a lot of criticism for its wall-to-wall coverage of the plane in the months following the crash. You addressed that in the book, and you even point out that President Obama weighed in at the White House Correspondents' Dinner in May of 2014. Let's listen to what he said.
I am happy to be here, even though I am a little jet-lagged from my trip to Malaysia. The lengths we have to go to get CNN coverage these days. I think they're still searching for their table.
Do you think that that criticism was justified?
Not really. You know, the former CNN talk show host described our coverage as absurd. Eric Wemple in the Post, Washington Post, described it as very unsatisfying. Other people called it insane. And I asked my boss, and it's not easy asking your boss, you know, did we go too far too long? Because there was a moment when I thought, hang on, I think maybe we're doing a bit too much here. When you get to week six and nobody else is doing this. But he says no, because first of all, it is part of CNN's greater strategy to go all in. Fewer stories, more detailed, more coverage. Own the story. And the second reason, we all fly. Jeremy, you are as fascinated by MH370. What happened? Where is the plane? And could it happen again? And that, I think, gives us a certain pass, a certain leeway for the amount of coverage that we did.
Well, and I have to say, even 2 years on, reading this book, it's still fascinating to think about all of the possibilities with this vanishing of this plane. Richard Quest, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir, for having me.